Welcome to the Red Phone Zone, issue number 67. I am Aaron. With me is Ethan.
Yo.
This is the first time we've actually done a show in a while.
That is true, yes.
Yeah, and so I guess we're just going to have to see if we can knock off the rust and get back into our wonderful rapport that we had before. Tonight, we do not have a guest host, so it's just going to be Ethan and I, so we can see if Ethan and I alone can keep this shit going.
All right, I'm going to unhook my mic here.
You're going to unhook your mic, Ethan. Oh, wow, man, that's riveting, riveting radio.
Riveting radio. Yeah, we were, I think, planning on having an in-studio guest, and then that fell through, and then we were going to try to set up our backup, and that fell through, and then we had another backup, and that fell through. So,
well, I mean, the third backup was just kind of a, hey, if you can be here, that's cool.
Yeah.
If
but
not,
but still, you know, we're on the backup of the backup of the backup.
Well,
so.
We got a couple of cats in here. They can be. They can be.
We do. We do. And you know, the multi-dollar studio has been rearranged.
Multi-dollar?
Yes, multi-dollar studio.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been rearranged. I just didn't feel like cleaning today. So
that's true.
My studio looks like a bomb has gone off in it. But, you know, as we are getting back into this, we're kind of sort of changing gears a bit because we're doing something that we've kind of talked about before. Tonight we're going to be doing a little bit of talking about the Harry Potter, kind of to coincide with the DVD release of Deathly Hallows Part 2, kind of because I think I can easily talk Harry Potter, and Ethan can talk Harry Potter for a while. But back on issue number 8, we decided we did our top 6 favorite of the Harry Potter movies, and we
way back in issue number 8. I mean,
a long time ago. You know, this still
that's
one of,
about over a year and a half now. I think
we did it. This was pre Deathly Hallows Part 2, and it was pre. Pre-Deathly Hallows Part 1, even.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was cool. So, we don't want to really, you know, revisit the well, so to speak. So, tonight, instead of the movies, we're going to be doing our top 6 favorite Harry Potter characters, which was Ethan's suggestion, and I hate Ethan for, and we'll get more into that.
It's just one more excuse for Aaron to hate me, so,
I don't really need that many excuses.
No, he doesn't. He's actually pretty good with it.
So, yeah. So we are going to talk that. That's going to be our main discussion tonight. But before we do that, we have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. This is when we talk news that's relevant to us geeks. And it's been like 2 months since we've done this. There's probably a ton of news we're going to be overlooking.
I trimmed it way, way down because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I was like, oh, that's interesting, but who gives a fuck? So
I do know that there was some news that like came and went.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know
and
what I mean?
And I completely went over,
you know,
bypassed
like,
all that
you
crap.
Know,
and honestly, it's actually way... I don't have a whole heck of a lot to talk about
right.
in this
There's some big stuff that's happened in the last couple of weeks that we can talk.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of big things that happened in the last, you know, day, really. But the big one I saw, this is an older story, was The Punisher is heading to television.
Cool.
After 3 feature film versions, Frank Castle is heading to the small screen. Deadline reports that Fox has plans to develop the Marvel Comics Punisher as a television series for former Criminal Minds showrunner Edward Alan Bernero. It's set up through ABC Studios. The Punisher will take on the format of an hour-long police procedural. In this version, Castle will work by day as an NYPD detective and by night as the Punisher, righting the wrongs that he legally can't. The Punisher marks the 4th live-action Marvel Universe property planned for television, following the proposed Hulk series, Cloak and Dagger, and a.k.a. Jessica Jones, based on Brian Michael Bendis' Alias. I think Punisher on TV sounds like a bad idea to me.
They could do it. I mean, it's going to be Fox, right?
Yeah, if it's Fox, and based on their track record with their last comic book adaptation, which was Human Target, I'm not too enthusiastic about this.
See, I just don't care enough. I mean, that's like something I keep going back to. I mean,
now if this was if it was like HBO coming out or AMC or someone like
that'd be cool.
Coming out to do, we're going to do a Punisher series, then I'd be excited. But this is just Fox going to muck it up, and it's, you know, a police procedural type thing with him. And I'm like, why even call it the Punisher?
Because
it's not really the Punisher.
It doesn't smack with failure or success to me. I can see it really going either way. I mean, it just depends on who they get involved, what direction they take with it.
I mean, I'm still a fan of Thomas Jane as
like
Punisher
that.
Personally, but I mean, did you see Warzone?
Yeah, I liked Warzone.
It was pretty. It was cheesy. It was based on the Max Line comics that I'm not a huge fan of. But The Punisher with Thomas Jane, I thought, really kind of captured it the best. None of them have done it perfectly.
No, but I did like that one quite a
well,
bit.
Well, then there's, of course, Dolph Lundgren.
But. Yeah, that was a great, fantastically horrible movie. But yep. Okay, you know, I reserve judgment because I don't really have enough strong feelings about it to really care. So if it comes out, it's good, great. If not, oh well.
Well, especially since Marvel Comics have managed to get the rights. Marvel Studios has the rights for Punisher again.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing with Punisher for me is if you follow Marvel Comics, Punisher just doesn't work in the Marvel Universe. It's really oddball character.
It's a clunky fit.
But he's a popular one, and people keep trying to do him. And it's kind of... it just doesn't really work very well.
Yeah, you know, the Punisher can be like kind of one of those bridge characters, you know, because, like, you know, the people out there that, you know, they like their action movies and bullshit, you know, they could really dig the Punisher. Do you remember when I was working at the gas station? I don't remember if you were there or not. But I was reading a Batman comic book, and I want to say you were there or Anthony was there, and some dude came in and saw the Batman comic book. He's all like, Batman sucks. Punisher kick his ass because he uses guns. And you know, that's kind of like, that's always...
No, I don't think I was there for that, but I did hear about it.
Yeah, that's always flavored my taste of for Punisher fans, and I haven't really found that wrong.
And really, for the Punisher, he's one of those characters you sort of have to get in the second... Garth Ennis series that he did, the one right before the Max Line comics, was actually really good, because the way to make Punisher work is to... The way he had him was really interesting. It was, Punisher is the only sane person in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And everyone else is crazy because they're running around in tights.
Yeah.
And, you know, superheroes are hypocritical, especially people like, you know, Daredevil and Spider-Man and stuff like that. And Punisher comes in and is, you know, this very sane, stake in the ground that manages to keep his bearing as to what he has to do and when he has to do it. But the problem with the Punisher movies and really iterations of the Punisher, like if they do this series, is he's not going to punish.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of problem with him, is he sort of half-asses it. And I just think, especially a network TV show like on Fox, I just don't see it really working very well.
It probably won't.
And I just don't see this really going anywhere. And this is a bit of old news, and I haven't heard anything beyond it. And I would really guess that this is probably going to be in development hell or just not happen. So, you know, it's Fox trying to cash in on the comics, the whole comics craze that's been going on.
Yeah.
But of course,
I hope it's great. I got my doubts.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they're doing a new Die Hard movie, right?
Yeah.
It's A Good Day to Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set for release on February 14th, 2013. Of course, Bruce Willis is returning as John McClane.
February 14th, 2014.
February 14th, 2013, yes.
Valentine's Day. Fuck yeah.
And last I remember reading this, his son is going to be making an appearance in it. The John McClane Jr. or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's about it. It's not going to be directed by Len Wiseman. It's a new director.
I heard who it was, and it's like a nobody.
It's no one I really remember, so. Yes. So there's that. Obviously, Thor 2 is moving forward, and they signed...
Yeah, we got a director, Patty Jenkins.
They signed Patty Jenkins, who did Monster, right?
Yeah.
Which is a really interesting choice.
Well, I mean...
Because I know Marvel tried to court the King's Speech guy. Tom Hooper. Thank you. To do movies. He said no, but you know, he also said that he was flattered.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, whatever. And he has other things he wants to do. But Marvel is going after some oddball choices for directors.
You know, look at it's like, I mean, we said
Kenneth Branagh was a weird choice to begin with.
That's a good movie. I like bringing this up to people because when people talk about the weird Marvel directors, they always jump on Kenneth Branagh, and I think that Favreau was a really weird choice for Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and that turned out wonderfully.
He really hadn't done any big action movies
prior
to that.
No, he did Swingers.
That, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
And so, he was a weird choice, and I think Branagh's even weirder, just because he usually does the Shakespearean stuff, you know?
I mean, they're all strange fits, but... I mean,
if you think about it, the only movie that they've done that would fit with the director that you think would have been The Incredible Hulk with Louis Leterrier.
Yeah.
And that, I think that one, The Incredible Hulk's a fun movie. I enjoy it. It's the worst Marvel movie, I think, out there from Marvel Studios.
I'd agree with that.
And it's probably their least, quote-unquote, successful.
Well, the first Hulk made a hair less money. But
yeah, but it wasn't really Marvel Studios, though.
That's a great book. I love that movie.
So do I. I mean, I like them both.
God, I hate it that people hate that movie.
But, you know, if you look at it, they're track record with directors is now Louis Leterrier, Kenneth Branagh, John Favreau, and Joe Johnston and Joss Whedon at this point. Joe Johnston sort of made sense.
Joe Johnston made perfect sense for Captain America,
right.
And in a abstract way, Joss Whedon makes a lot of sense.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But Patty Jenkins, I'm kind of excited about it.
Yeah, it makes me really intrigued at what they're going to do for it. I mean, my idea is probably what's going to happen is the Avengers will happen, and then he'll get word that his father's dead or something.
Yeah,
that
Thor's
dead.
Thor 2 is post.
Yeah. So is Iron Man 3. All the next Marvel movies are all post Avengers.
Well,
so.
Well, yeah.
I'm interested to see where they go with that.
Me too.
Honestly,
I'm too. I mean, a lot of people, you know, they're dumb and they're like, "Oh, this is fucking stupid." And you know, I'm just like, dude,
it's an Academy Award winning director.
Technically Academy Award winning screenwriter.
Sure,
but yeah, she's interesting.
I mean, this is someone who does a movie like Monster.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, which.
It's not my flavor of movie,
as far from a Marvel Comics movie as you can see.
So I'm interested.
Speaking of the Marvel Comics movie, I also saw a little article about Mickey Rourke griping about his part in Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
So he sort of strikes me as a bit weird on that, but...
Well, he bitches and moans, but he was... Well, if we're talking about the same article, he was talking about Sin City 2, and he just like said, "Well, I might come back to Iron Man, or rather, Sin City 2, if they pay me enough." I wouldn't want some bullshit to happen like what happened in Iron Man 2, where I didn't get to flex my actor muscles. I'm like, dude, come on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he said some comment about Marvel Comics just wanted to make a dumb comic book movie, and
they do.
And
it's profitable.
Don't break the mold. You know, I mean, it makes the money. And
our friend Weatherwax,
we both of us really liked Iron Man 2.
John doesn't, and none of the Bag and Board cast guys particularly do. But John's major complaint about it is that he said it felt like a advertisement for the Avengers, and I don't really agree with that. But I do
see,
get his point.
I don't agree with it either. With Iron Man 2, the great thing about Tony Stark is he's his own villain, and. What I liked about Iron Man 2 was it wasn't about the villain. It was about Tony Stark. And
it is why Iron Man 1 worked as well as it did.
Yeah, and most sequels like that are about the villain. You know, I mean, Spider-Man 2 is pretty much about
Doc Ock,
and then Spider-Man 3 was about the 38 villains in that movie. And really, Iron Man 2 just was, nicely, it was about Iron Man. So, I don't know. I liked that. So my sort of comment on Mickey Rourke's little thing is okay.
Yeah, I mean it's Mickey
movie
Rourke.
Wasn't about you, so
you know Mickey Rourke has traditionally been at least a little bit difficult to work with.
Yeah,
I mean, it's why he didn't work for as long as he did.
Yeah.
He's a good actor. I liked him a lot in The Wrestler. I kind of thought he got robbed of his Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean I do think that he was better than Sean Penn. Because Sean Penn won for Milk, and Sean Penn's always great.
Sean Penn was really good in Milk.
He was, but I think Mickey Rourke was just such an interesting role.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to be going off of the cuff here, but do you have the Joseph Gordon-Levitt casting news on there?
That was the next one I was going to talk about.
I like
that. We're both big fans of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I mean, I think he's a fantastic actor. I'm really looking forward to seeing him in. No. There's actually several of his movies I haven't seen. I haven't seen that, or The Lookout's one I really would like to check out.
I told somebody.
And there's another one he did that's like this noir movie.
Brick.
Is
a noir movie.
Okay, it's the one where he's trying to find it, like.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like his girlfriend or something
like
that.
Well, it's a murderer. I've told people.
And I've seen the trailer for that, then it looked really good. I haven't seen it yet.
No. That's not what you're talking about. I don't remember what that was called, but I saw that too. But at any rate, I have told people that Brick is the best movie I've seen in the last two or three years, and I stand behind that. It was just so unexpectedly good.
Yeah, he's a fantastic actor. Yeah, that's one I haven't seen. And,
good
and,
movie.
I mean,
definitely
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is one of those guys who would really get me into a theater just to see his performance. And he's in, last I saw, he was still just in talks. I mean, nothing has been confirmed or anything, but he's talks for Tarantino's Django Unchained.
I mean, come on, dude.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I'd be right there with you. I mean, I was going to see Django Unchained anyway.
How many times
but,
have I said that on this show that... that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is my favorite working actor. How many times on this show have I said that Tarantino is my favorite working director?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just so fucking excited about this idea. I mean, I just...
No, I'm with you.
Well, I would be fucking there anyway, but that's just
it's just it's Tarantino doing a Western, and if Joseph Gordon-Levitt manages to be in it, it's just awesome. I mean, anything that gets Gordon-Levitt more work, I'm happy with, because
absolutely.
I think he's starting to get... he's starting to get noticed,
he's
I think,
to get
more.
That cred.
Finally. It's about damn time, you know?
I'd like to think the Red Phone Zone had something to do with that.
Oh, yeah,
I know better than that.
Totally, yes.
I think, you know what I think it is? I think it's his talent. I think it's his versatility.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, part of it is the whole Heath Ledger business after he died, and a lot of people decided, well, who's the next big, you know, up-and-coming? And
am I the standard here? Because that's exactly what happened to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
the day Heath Ledger died, I decided that Joseph Gordon-Levitt was my go-to guy.
Mm-hmm.
The day he died. I mean, I can probably prove that through documentation somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can... argue here and there, you know, before
there's good actors out there.
Oh yeah.
But he's the one, you know, Ryan Gosling's a fantastic actor, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt does movies that appeal to me more than Ryan Gosling.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'm really excited about that news.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that movie even more if he gets in it. Even if he doesn't get in it, I'm going to see it, but you know, it's cool that he's in talks for it.
Did
at least.
Kevin Costner leaving that movie make our show yet?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's old news, and he's been replaced by Kurt the fucking Russell. Yes.
I don't think that Kurt Russell being replacing him has made this show.
Yeah, we mentioned it. It was a while back now. Yes, I remember us mentioning it.
I know
point.
That we talked about Kevin Costner leaving, but I don't know if we mentioned
it's also been, you know, 2 months since we did a regular show, but
Kurt
Russell joining has taken his part. I'm all for that. I like Kurt Russell's replacing
Kurt
one
Russell.
White Earp with another, and hey, I'm all for that. The next Bond movie, the 23rd Bond movie, has started principal photography, and it is called Skyfall.
This is good fucking news all around.
Directed by Sam Mendes, and the villain, of course, Javier Bardem, which is phenomenal.
And fucking what's his face is confirmed.
Ray Fiennes is in it, but they haven't confirmed what role
he's
is
in it though.
Yeah, but he's in it.
He's fucking Blofeld, and you know it.
See, I just don't know if they're gonna go with the whole Blofeld route. Yeah, I think they're really trying to distance themselves from that mythology.
I'd like to see that, man.
But yeah, Ray.
But
well,
fucking
Ray
Fiennes.
Even so, it's Ray Fiennes in the movie. I'm like, okay, I'm there.
I read it.
Judi Dench still is coming back as Dem.
Jeffrey Wright has still not been...
Yeah, he was not announced on the cast list.
So he might not be,
for,
which is cool.
For Felix Leiter, which is fine. Felix Leiter wasn't in all the books, so, you know. Just because he's not announced, I mean, they're replacing his character or whatever, so...
I read an article.
Plus, it's a Bond movie. It's about Bond. It's not about Felix Leiter.
Yeah, exactly. I read an interview with Sam Mendes, and he said something like he was going for winning Oscars for this movie instead of making a badass action movie.
Nice.
And while I don't like people making movies to win Oscars,
sure,
I kind of like that approach.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's also going to be completely separate from the from the continuity set up in Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale, which I thought was weird, but fucking cares.
Yeah, well, Quantum of Solace wasn't as...
I like Quantum of Solace, goddammit. It gets a bad rap because it's not nearly as good as fucking Casino
Royale.
That's
where I was going, is I like Quantum of Solace just fine.
I like it quite
I mean,
a bit.
I love Casino Royale. Yeah. Quantum of Solace is good. Unfortunately, it has the unfortunate problem of following Casino Royale.
Well,
it jumps in right at the end of where Casino Royale left off, so I think, unfortunately, a lot of people unjustly compared it to it, and it's not nearly as good a movie.
It's just like I said on our Bond show. I mean, I think that I'm like everybody, and Casino Royale just fucking bitch slapped me. I was not expecting that great of a movie. It was so cool.
Yeah, it's Casino Royale's great, and I'm looking forward to Skyfall.
I am too.
They've got a great cast and a great director on
good
there,
director,
and
I'm
looking forward to it. And they're filming it, and it's due out next year, late November next year, so a year from now. Yeah,
I'm there, dude. I mean, I'm
looking forward to it. And the news that just happened just recently was Brett Ratner resigned as producer of the Oscars because of some comments he made apparently in several interviews. I don't know the specifics behind it.
He was on I don't know what he said. I don't know the comments. I just know that he was on publicity tours for Tower Heist.
Tower Heist, yeah.
And he said something, apparently it was racist or whatever.
Yeah.
And everyone got all pissed off, and he ended up resigning,
and then
soon thereafter,
like within hours, Eddie Murphy stepped down as the host, and just before we went on recording here, Brian Grazer was announced to replace Brett Ratner as the producer.
Cute.
So
that's cool.
But what else has Grazer done?
What else has he done?
Yeah. Just for our listeners.
He's Ron Howard's partner, so he's an Oscar winner. He did A Beautiful Mind. He did like Apollo 13. He did the Da Vinci Code movies. He did he's got a longtime partnership with Ron Howard.
Yeah, he's one of those directors that's done quite a lot of stuff.
He's one of those good dependable producers. I mean, he's no Spielberg. He's no mm-hmm. Laurentiis or somebody
he's one of those sort of like Bruckheimer. He's done a ton of stuff.
Yeah, he's really dependable. So, he does some good solid work. So
ultimately, we don't care.
Yeah, I mean,
we're gonna watch the Oscars one way or another.
I don't care about the awards show. I said it last year, and I'll say it this year. I would prefer to be really, really, really entertained, but when it comes down to it, I'm just there for the awards.
Mm-hmm. And we've had a couple trailers come out in the last several weeks. First and foremost, being the most awesome Avengers trailer.
Yeah, that was a good trailer. So
a while ago now, but man, I watched it and I still got goosebumps.
I watched it a couple of times. I mean, it was...
You get a sticker on GetGoo for watching it, you know, for
really?
checking into it. Yeah.
Oh, well, let me do that real quick.
Yeah, you get an Avengers Coming Soon sticker. It's
pretty sweet. No, I already have that. Never mind. I got that a while ago.
Yeah,
that's a good trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, oh boy, I mean...
My only issue is Thor looks kind of weird in it, but other than that, I really don't give a crap. I want to see the movie so bad.
I mean, Thor looks fine. It's his costume. I get it.
Yeah, sure.
Mark Ruffalo looks old and fat. That's my issue with it.
Sure.
And Rachel said it, too. And so that's not me being Mr. Bitch. I didn't say anything, and she brought it up. He looks old, he looks gray, he looks fat, which is fine because...
How old is Mark Ruffalo?
He is 3 years younger than Norton.
Oh, okay.
I looked this up like the other day.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Norton as Banner in The Incredible Hulk. It's too bad they couldn't work out him coming back. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the Avengers movie.
We're
going to
get a little bit
awesome.
Off topic here because that's what the Red Phone Zone is all about.
Exactly.
Okay, so you know that we reported when it happened about the controversy of Edward Norton being replaced with that movie. Everyone was pissed off, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Why didn't everybody get really pissed off when Terrence Howard got replaced from Iron Man with Don Cheadle?
I think that happened amidst a lot of other stuff.
I can give you my answer, but I'm just wondering why everyone else didn't jump on.
Sure. Well, I just remember that happened right on the beginning of the whole business where Marvel renegotiated all the contracts, remember? And there was that thing out there that, you know... Samuel Jackson wasn't going to be Nick Fury and all that good stuff. But they renegotiated everything. And with the whole Terrence Howard thing, I just watched the Iron Man movies the other day.
I
was thinking about it from going from one movie to the other. And I thought about this, when he didn't come back. And there's two sides to it. I mean, you get Marvel's side, which was, well, you know, he's an asshole and asked for too much money. And then you get his side of it, which was, you know, it's like,
they don't like us black people, which is what the one I got was.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think ultimately he was replaced by Don Cheadle, and everyone went, hell, we like Don Cheadle.
Well, see, and that was my answer, is I cannot stand Terrence Howard. I mean, he's a fine actor.
He's kind of smarmy.
I cannot stand the man that comes across in the interviews. Mm-hmm. I remember he got in I don't know if I'm going to say a lot of trouble, but he got some people like looking at him funny where he said in an interview, and I don't know how the fuck this comes up in an interview, but he said he would never date a woman unless she used a moistened towelettes to clean up after using the restroom. I mean, what the fuck? How does that come up in an interview?
Yeah, you know, I got nothing.
You know, I mean, just I don't like the guy. And I like Don Cheadle just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I like Don Cheadle a lot more than just fine. I like him quite a bit.
He's really, really good.
Terrence Howard, I can't fucking stand him. And I think that he did not deserve his Oscar nomination. Did you see Hustle and Flow?
No.
He was okay in it. He was not Oscar nomination good in that.
Sure, and that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
With Oscar nominations and actual Oscar wins.
Yeah, like, you know, Halle Berry.
Kim Basinger.
Yeah, there you go. She was pretty good.
Yeah,
she deserved the nomination, didn't deserve the win.
Yes. But yeah, the whole Terrence Howard business, I
think it's just he's a smarmy bastard, and I think everyone else thinks that,
I think it's funny in Iron Man 2, they sort of address it a little bit as with, have you watched that movie with the commentary yet?
I've never.
Okay.
Who's on it?
It's just Favreau.
Okay.
Favreau actually talks about replacing him at the beginning of it when Don Cheadle shows up, and they wrote his first lines with that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
When Don Cheadle walks in, he just says, "It's me, get over it, accept it, move on."
Yeah.
And really, I was like, okay, I'm good with that.
I read
we're talking
in a
Hotel Rwanda.
Well, I know that.
I mean, and all those Steven Soderbergh movies he's in, and I'm good with
that. Well, I know that he got the role fresh off of his Oscar nomination. Terrence Howard did.
Yeah.
And he got way too much money. And he got more money than, or he got twice the money that Robert Downey Jr. got.
Sure.
And when he went to renegotiate his contract for Iron Man 2, Robert Downey Jr. was let out of the insurance clause, and he came on as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And he still wanted twice what Robert Downey Jr. was making.
Yeah, and I can understand why Marvel went no.
No, you don't.
The fan, and we talked about how much the fans love Downey Jr. too.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I don't think we talked about it on the show, but how you pointed this out, not since Christopher Reeve's Superman
has
embodied a character so much for a generation. And granted, yes, he's only done two movies, but when you really think about it,
Christopher Reeve only did four.
I know.
It was over, what, 7 years, something like that?
Yeah, well, when you get down to it, he's so perfect for the part, and really you can't see anyone else in that.
And I've been a huge Robert Downey Jr. fan since way before Iron Man.
Since I saw him in Chaplin.
Yeah. I mean, longer than that. I liked him in fucking Saturday Night Live. He cracked me up when he's on there.
And he's one of those guys that you don't realize was on Saturday Night Live. You know? You don't realize he was a comedian.
Well, he was on for like one season. So, but, you know, I've always liked him. And, you know, I was one of those people that was somewhat affected by his drug problem, because I hated it, because, you know, he's such a talented actor. And, you know, I kept on expecting to, you know, hear that he'd overdosed, and
me happy he turned all that around.
I really hope that he stays turned around.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's doing wonderfully now, and I think he's reaping the benefits, and I think he's wonderful. So
It's great to see him get success, and Terrence Howard can
fuck off and die.
As you say, suck a fart out of my ass.
Suck a fart out of Ethan's ass.
Exactly. The other trailers I managed to see, the last Muppets parody trailer,
you know,
which was a parody. It was a parody of itself.
Cool.
It was a parody of the parody trailer.
I didn't watch it. I saw that it was available. I just hadn't watched it.
And I know what else comes out. Happy Feet 2 comes out same day, and I'm totally not giving a crap and saying Muppets all the way for me.
I know Chloe's pretty excited.
And I know you're way excited about a fourth Underworld movie, Underworld Awakening, The Return of Kate Beckinsale.
This time it's personal,
yes. From the trailer, looks like an Underworld movie. I still haven't seen the third one myself, but
it's my favorite. That's not saying much, but it's my favorite.
But looks like this one has
Martin Sheen, right?
No, I didn't see him in there.
Yeah, fuck that movie.
I really didn't see anyone from the previous three.
Kate Beckinsale.
Kate Beckinsale wasn't in the third one.
What about Scott
Speedman? He's not in it.
Really?
He's not in it. Apparently, the movie takes place 12 years after the first movie or the second movie, and they're both like happen at the same time, first and second one anyway.
Yeah. Well, the second one's the third one's like, you know,
is a prequel, right?
Yeah, way the fuck.
But this one takes place 12 years later, and she's like been in cryogenic sleep or something like that.
Of course.
And She's woken up and humanity's found out about the vampires and the lichens and are now trying to wipe them out. And I'm like, okie dokie.
I
know you can't stand those movies, so.
I would like to go to an alternate universe.
Sure.
Where I could see what those movies were if The Matrix never happened.
Sure, okay.
I mean,
at least they're not sparkling vampires.
No, they're not sparkling vampires, but I just think those movies are just too influenced by The Matrix and they suck too much for my taste. But I don't know. I mean, I don't hate those movies. I just sigh in contempt when everyone's all those movies are badass, yo, and
yeah,
you know.
I enjoy them.
What they are,
I enjoy them just fine. But like I said, I haven't seen the third one. And the last trailer I spotted, of course, is Star Wars: The Phantom Menace in 3D. Trailer
came
out.
I didn't know there was a trailer for that.
Yeah, it's
okay.
You know, the episode one trailer, but then they tack on various 3D stuff for it. So,
oh, cool. I'll see that.
Yeah, and I think it is going to hit IMAX 3D too. So I'm excited to see it on IMAX 3D. So I know you hate Star Wars.
Nah, yeah,
can't stand it. Yeah,
stupid Star Wars. Dark Knight Rises first 8 minutes in front of.
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Protocol.
And it got a PG-13 rating.
What did
the
Mission Impossible?
The trailer, The Dark Knight, 8 minutes, got a PG-13 rating.
Cool.
I just saw that article this morning.
I'm conflicted. I don't want to give Tom Cruise any money, but boy,
think of it as giving Simon Pegg money.
Okay, I'm there.
Because he's in.
Well, didn't they say it's only going to be in the?
I think it's only in the IMAX.
The digital IMAX at that, right?
Yeah.
And we don't have one.
Yeah, we do.
Digital IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
the AMC 30 out here is a digital IMAX.
Is it? Well, yes. Then I'm there, and I'm just going to have to be pissed off all the way through the.
Just
trailer.
Think of Simon Pegg.
Simon
and
I'm cool
Brad
Renner.
Bird.
I'm
Brad
right.
Bird, The Incredibles.
Yeah,
there you go.
I like Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, and Jeremy Renner too. You know, Hawkeye. Speaking of Hawkeye.
Cool. I mean, I'm there. Duh.
Yeah. Well, that's all the news I really earmarked. There a ton of other crap happened, but none of it really matters.
Some people died.
Yeah, some people died.
I know Chuck D died.
Joe Frazier.
Yep. Shit happens.
Yeah. And no one huge.
No.
Like made me cry. So, yeah.
I don't particularly die when celebrities cry. I don't particularly cry when celebrities die, though. So,
yeah.
Well, that is going to bring us to the end of our Geekly Happenings. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our main segment discussion about Harry Potter. He's an elf, a dancing by himself, a boogie down like a unicorn, a ghost up until the break of dawn. Put your hands up in the air like an ogre, just don't care. Can you dance like a ogre? Flying off from the cliff, swimming down to the ground. And we are back. We're going to be talking about some Harry Potter again. I'm not going to bury the lead. But back on issue number 8, we talked Harry Potter. This was pre-both Deathly Hallows movies. And I was telling Ethan before we did the show that
the saga is now concluded.
The saga is now concluded and everything went well. They made lots of money and everyone's fat and happy. Telling Ethan that the release of the Deathly Hallows films drastically changed my top 6 list of the movies because... I really, really, really like Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had time to really sit down and do it.
I really haven't thought about how it would change my top 6 list. I mean, I would want to sit down and watch Part 1 and Part 2 back to back just to, because it's, I don't think I've seen Part 1 since theaters, and I don't think I've seen Part 2 since theaters
as well,
and I only saw it once.
I've seen Part 1 since theaters, not Part 2.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I would like to get a better idea of that.
Yeah.
But I really loved part two.
I loved part two.
Part one was all exposition, but part, what
part,
it was,
part
but
one
I liked
was,
it better than
part one
the
was
previous
real good.
One,
the Half-Blood Prince. And, you know, I think I put Half-Blood Prince pretty high on my list, but I really liked the book a lot.
Yeah.
Love that book.
The book's good. And translating that into a movie was hard just because there's a lot of exposition that you need in that book, in that movie.
Well, I mean, it's...
And now that you had the payoff of Deathly Hallows 1 and 2, now, but really more part 2, it was nice.
You've seen all the movies.
Yeah.
You've read all the books.
Yes.
And you're a fan.
Yes.
Okay. And I've read the books. And actually
it's been over 10 years since I read the books.
Yeah. I actually read a first edition copy of Philosopher's Stone that my sister bought at there's a we live in I live
for
in
other Americans that's the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yep. But I bought a and I think I did it on the last show, and I've done it through the course of this show. I keep calling the Sorcerer's Stone the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah,
because when I first read the book, I read it in I read the UK edition, the first edition of
the Philosopher's Stone. They changed it here because they figured Americans were dumb and didn't know what Philosopher's
My
Stone.
My sister heard about the Harry Potter books book on NPR, and she went to the store that we have in Lawrence called Brits. And she picked up a copy of the Philosopher's Stone on there, and nice. She gave it to me. And I actually read these books as they came out. It was pretty cool. And I'm a big fan, and I'm not ashamed of it. I know that Ethan's got a scar in his past about Harry Potter fandom, if you'd like to talk about that.
I don't even remember that anymore. I
just do it to sell toys.
No, that wasn't me.
Yeah, that was you.
Was that me?
Yeah, that was you.
I say a lot of things.
Yeah. You said that the only reason they're doing this is sell lunch boxes and toys and stuff. And then you had the She Who Must Not Be Named, who was into Harry Potter, and you watched, and you're like, okay, this shit's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I know I started watching the movies before I read the books, and I think I think the third movie came out, and that's when I read the books.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read the second...
When did the third movie... Was that around 2004?
Sure. I don't have a clue.
So
that sounds about right.
2003, I think. 2003, 2004, it's when I read the books. I read a bunch, and then I listened to the audiobooks for like the last three or four of them.
I read the...
The audiobooks are fantastic.
I read The Philosopher's Stone, I want to say, in 1999.
Uh-huh.
And then literally every single one of them, I went to a midnight release and got the book and read it. And I'm a big Harry Potter fan. I try not to call myself a fanatic because
that's
think
what a fan is.
Well, okay. I try not to call myself like an uber super duper fan because I try to leave it for the younger people than me that they grew up. Because like when the first one came out, I was fucking like 20 years old.
Yeah.
So I mean, it didn't shape who I am. But I'm a big fan. It's a great universe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a wonderful mythology built up, and there's some...
I still think if there's any sort of indication or evidence that anyone sold their soul to the devil, it would be J.K. Rowling because of her huge success with this.
I don't know, man. I don't see any indication of that at all because it's so good.
Well, for me, though, no. What I'm saying, though, is like this was like the first thing she ever did type of thing. And
wrote it on a napkin and all
that
noise.
But it's, not bringing any of that in there. But, when it first came out, I was not for it. I thought it was, I wasn't, it's of the devil or anything. But, I didn't read it because everyone else was reading it and loving it. And I was like, I want to be a curmudgeon and be contrary. And finally came to my senses and the movies came out, enjoyed the movies. And
I think
the first two movies came out and I didn't want to read the books because I just wanted to enjoy the movies. But eventually, I was getting laid and, I was like, hey, I'll watch them. I'll read them now. So I did. And they were good.
They're real good books. Real good movies, too. I mean, some of them are... Rachel and I are working our way through them right now, and we watched the first two, and I fucking read about yo-yoing on the internet instead of watching the first two, because I'm just not a big fan of the first two. I mean, they're just too goddamn American. It's like
which ones? The
first two. The
first two.
The Sorcerer's Stone and the...
Now you're talking movies or the books?
Movies.
The movies. Okay.
I like
Christopher Columbus movies.
Yeah, the Christopher Columbus movies I'm not a huge fan of. They're good.
Yeah, I mean, what they are.
I'm not saying they're bad movies.
No.
But they're a bit too long.
I remember, especially the first one. I mean, my least favorite's the second movie. But,
My least favorite's the first movie.
See, for me, the first movie, it was interesting to watch as an adult because it was a 2.5-hour kids movie. It was about 2.5 hours long, it was over 2 hours. I mean, it was a long
one. I thought
it
was over 3 hours, but...
Okay. It wasn't that long, no. But I remember thinking, it was beyond amazing to me that the main characters, or that they were a children's type of thing, and kids would sit there for that length of time, you know, and watch it.
Yeah.
But the Chris Columbus movies, it's definitely, it's interesting to go back and watch them now, especially with the other movies, mm-hmm. is that you see this...
Wonderful progression.
Yeah, this interesting progression. Is that the Blu-ray set you got?
Yeah.
Can I check it out?
Yeah.
All right, let's see. So this is the first 7 movies.
Yep.
152 minutes is the first one, first movie.
Then how long is that?
2 hours and...
Really fucking long.
32 minutes.
It just feels longer.
Yeah.
Feels longer to hours. Me.
Then the second movie's longer. It's 161
See,
minutes.
The second movie, I get where you're coming from.
Second movie is the longest one.
Yeah. I get where
well,
you're coming from.
This one obviously doesn't have the eighth movie in here, so we don't...
That one was stupid short, man. It's the shortest of all of them.
Really?
Right. Yeah. But I absolutely get where you're coming from with the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
The reason why I put it above the first one was I watched the first one, and I'm worried, because mm-hmm. I know we got 6 more movies coming, and we're going to have to deal with this awful fucking acting. And I'm just like, this sucks. And then Daniel Radcliffe, man, he turned over such a leaf with the second movie. He was such a mm-hmm. better actor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I think really in the third movie, they all sort of came together really well.
And you're not a big fan of the third movie.
I'm not. But
I adore the third one.
It's
also one of my favorite books.
Interesting to look at film-wise just because of how different it is from the first two. Because you had this... Chris Columbus set the tone. It's yep. Chris Columbus, for God's sake. And so then you change that tone dramatically with Alfonso Cuarón.
And Rachel and I were talking about this the other day. And if I remember right, when we talked about those films... You put the third one pretty low on your list.
I think the last four were all directed by Yates, right? Mike Newell did.
Yeah,
the
David Yates
one.
Did the fifth through the eighth.
Yeah,
and then Mike Newell did the fourth.
Yeah,
Cuarón did the third, and then Columbus did the first two.
Yeah,
but I was telling Rachel the other day that when you did your list, you put number 3 pretty low on your list, just saying that it was a jarring departure for you from the first two, mm-hmm. and I put it high on my list because it was a jarring departure from the first two.
Yeah.
And to me, it feels like a much more British film. It feels like a much more dark film, and I love that movie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are all wonderful movies, and there's not one of them I don't like. And a big part of that is the characters in it. I mean, it's a wonderful universe, but when it comes down to it, you can't hold a... What? You can't hold a universe together without intriguing and wonderful characters,
yeah.
which brings together our discussion for tonight. Now, do you agree with me? Do you think there's some good characters in these movies?
No, totally.
Well, books and movies.
Well, but yeah, the books and the movies. I think the movies. I think for me, it's part. The movies. You sort of also get into the actors with it too.
Yeah, big time actually.
And that obviously colored my perceptions when I read the books because the third movie come out, and then I read the books, and so I mean I was seeing Daniel Radcliffe and I was seeing
Emma Watson,
you know?
Or
yeah.
Rupert Grint. Now, I do know that you and I were on speaking terms when the fourth movie was being cast, because I know you and I had a big, huge-ass discussion going on about who was going to be cast as Mad-Eye Moody.
Yeah.
And I know that I was in the... Billy Connolly camp, and you were in
sure.
the...
I think I was in the Brian Cox
camp. You were in the Brian Cox camp.
Yeah.
And which is both of them would have been wonderful, and then,
oh yeah,
and then you know,
totally different characters.
Brendan Gleeson was great as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, I do remember that discussion, and it was cool.
Yeah.
So there's some wonderfully great characters in this, and fuck you for making me work this list out, because I did not have an easy time with this. I was talking to Rachel about it, and I said, okay, my list is such, and she said, well, what about blah blah blah? I'm like, fuck you, and then I had to rework my list because I forgot about a character that I really liked.
Well, I threw mine together in 10 minutes.
Well, I don't know.
Nope, not yet.
Jesus Christ, I've watched an entire episode of Charmed.
Whoopity
doo. Yeah, I know.
Yep. Well, why don't we... Well, since Rachel seems to want us to get this shit rolling,
let's get this shit rolling.
Let's get this shit rolling. Ethan, who's your number 6 favorite Harry Potter character?
Well, throwing my list together, I think my number 6 was Creature.
Creature. Good
yeah.
character.
I like how he's portrayed.
Not on
in the
my
movie.
List. Great character.
I like how he's portrayed in the movies, especially
sure.
because I mean you get the whole house elf thing. Especially with the movies, you're more colored by Dobby,
yep.
and obviously you think house elf, that's what you think.
Mm-hmm.
And Creature's such a big departure from that, and I like his just being a sourpuss little bastard, you know. But he's obviously constrained by his oath that he has given to or his oath that he has and the that he has to serve the family and, type of thing. And I really like how he goes about doing his business with that big curmudgeon, you know, complaining endlessly, but does it well. I like his, I thought he was a much more interesting house elf than Dobby was.
Yeah,
And obviously in the books, the house elves have a much bigger...
Huge bigger part. So. In terms of, you know, a secondary or even, you know, third tier character, I mean, he's got some major fucking baggage. I mean, I don't know how well they portrayed it in the movies, but one of the things about the reason why Creature was such a son of a bitch was because he was, you know, he was driven insane by a combination of not being able to carry out his master's last request and the portrait giving him instructions, and you know, I don't know that was portrayed that well in the movies, but
it was portrayed
really well in the books, and you felt
sort of
sorry
mentioned
for him.
Why he's all curmudgeon-y and whatnot, but I know specifically that J.K. Rowling made them keep Creature in there because of the part he plays in the seventh movie.
Yeah, and I don't particularly remember him showing up in the eighth movie, did he? No, because I know that that's one of the bitches that people have about the eighth movie is that there was no house elf army in the Battle of Hogwarts.
Creature, my number six.
Neat.
Who's your number six?
I don't know who. I don't have Creature on my list. I do like Creature though. I don't know. God, I like all these characters. I'm gonna say my number six. Hey, we're gonna go back to the well. We're gonna get out a Red Phone Zone staple. My number six is a tie.
Ooh.
My number six is Mad-Eye Moody and Barty Crouch Jr.
Okay.
You can't mention one without mentioning the other, I don't think.
Okay. Barty Crouch Jr. specifically. Mad-Eye Moody didn't make my list, but Barty Crouch Jr. is on my list at number four.
Isn't he a great character?
And the reason why, you know, you could put Mad-Eye Moody on there, but my argument for that is the Mad-Eye Moody that everybody knows and loves is actually Barty Crouch Jr.
I do like Mad-Eye Moody from books 5, 6, and 7.
Sure, but you remember him from book four.
That's why I'm tying them together.
Yeah, and you know, Barty Crouch, yes, he's emulating the character is what you're assuming, but that's the character that you're following for that.
Do you
want
to know why I decided to make this a tie instead of just putting Barty Crouch Jr. on there? It's because my favorite Mad-Eye Moody moment is a Mad-Eye Moody moment.
Sure.
It's when him and Lupin and Arthur Weasley go and fucking threaten the shit out of the Dursleys at the end of the fourth or the fifth book where he's got the bowler over his eye. I love that moment. But Barty Crouch Jr., honestly, sure, throw all the bullshit out about Mad-Eye Moody. I think he's an intriguing character. I guess spoiler, but Bellatrix is not on my list. I'm not a fan of Bellatrix.
Yeah,
I think she's
not mine either.
I don't like her, but I like the idea that devoted, fanatical follower of Voldemort, and to me that's better exemplified in Barty Crouch Jr. than in Bellatrix. And my thing about it is, if you haven't read the books, you might wonder what the fuck happened to Barty Crouch Jr. But in the books, and it actually leads very nicely into the fifth book with the whole bullshit going on at the ministry, Fudge, Cornelius Fudge, the then acting Minister of Magic, just willy-nilly had a Dementor suck out his soul to perform the Dementor's
kiss. They mention
it
at the end of the fourth movie.
They do not mention that.
They do not?
They do not mention that.
So I'm pretty sure it happens, though.
It wasn't shown in either the book or the movie. It was only mentioned in the book. They never made one mention of it in the movies. And so... I think he's an intriguing character.
It's more implied.
Maybe it is implied, but it's flat out said in the books. I think this is a really interesting character.
Yeah,
but, you know, at the
That's
same
why
time,
he reached my number four.
At the same time, I like Mad-Eye Moody a lot. At least I like the Mad-Eye Moody from the fourth
book. Well, it's
that
book. Constant vigilance.
Constant vigilance. One of the best scenes in all the books.
Yeah, oh, yeah, totally. And it's those scenes that...
Well, quite the Machiavellian character. I mean, he gets a run for the money for Dumbledore.
Well, it's scenes like that in the book that you remember that you love the character for, but that wasn't Mad-Eye Moody. That was Barty Crouch.
Well,
you know?
It's like... Remember my ferret?
Yeah.
Al? Yeah. Do you know why I named him Al?
No.
Because his name was Malfoy.
Oh, okay.
And because fucking Moody turned Malfoy into a white ferret, and that's like one of my favorite scenes in the books. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful character, and I'm gonna tie him with Mad Eye because I think they're both cool, but I don't think you can mention one without mentioning
the
other.
I think it's just a brilliant story element, a great character thing in the books. Of you get this character, and it's the first. It's really the first time in the books where you get a character who is the
warrior.
Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher that is a warrior, that is a...
First mention of Aurors, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Who is an Auror, who is, you know, someone who can take care of business and has been through hell. I mean, obviously he's got the eye and all that craziness. And you sort of, it's a step above Lupin because Lupin was you know, sickly and all that.
Well, yeah.
And you fall in love with this character, and at the end, it's not him. It's someone pretending to be him, and that's one of the reasons I'm just sold by that character. I think he's great.
If I remember right,
he's one of my favorite villains of the whole series.
Yeah. Goblet of Fire was your number,
your
favorite.
My number one. Yeah.
Now, wonderful movie. I'm not saying otherwise. But however, drastically different from the book.
Yes.
And would you recommend people read the book also?
Yes, I would recommend people read the book.
I mean, they're both great.
Honestly,
book.
I think I liked the movie better than the book for Goblet of Fire.
Maybe we'll get into that. The only movie that I can definitively say I like better than the book was Order of the Phoenix. Mm-hmm. I definitely like that book better than the movie. Movie better than the book. But it's a great movie. And it's definitely worth mentioning. And Barty Crouch Jr. is my number 6 and you're number 4, so that's pretty neat.
Yeah,
because I thought I was you know, pretty sneaky, sis, with that one. But
sure, good stuff, good stuff.
So that brings us down to your number 5.
My number 5 is a staple in here. It's one people I'm sure is going to show up. It's Severus Snape.
Yeah, great character.
You know, and definitely, like you said, the most unchanged character from the books to the movies.
Yep.
Played by Alan Rickman. I mean, who doesn't love Alan Rickman?
Second choice.
Second choice.
Who
was the first choice?
Tim Roth. Was actually given the role, signed on for the role, couldn't do it because of Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes movie. Then they went to Alan Rickman.
Terrible movie.
Man, that strikes me as a Doug Ray Scott not getting to do Wolverine.
Alan Rickman just does a great job playing that character.
You know, I pictured Alan Rickman reading the books.
Talk about, though, it's such a complex character, especially the huge arc from the beginning of the series to the end of the series. I mean, because you hate him. You hate the hell out of Snape. Yeah. And then by the end of the series, you understand him and you love him. And it's not because, he had this big change of heart. It's like, no, he's the same character throughout the entire book.
Where that heart is. Yeah, and Severus Snape is actually my number 2. I love Snape.
He's great.
He's a wonderful character.
His motivations are there. He just is such a human character.
Oh, quite.
And it's... It's literally the thing I love about him is at the beginning of the series he's a bad guy. I mean, you don't like him. He's the authority figure. Blah. I mean,
yeah.
And what I love about it though is at the end of the series, end of the movies, end of the books, he is the exact same character, but you understand him differently because you've been
because you grew up with Harry. Well, I mean, I didn't grow up with him, but you know, I went through the transition with Harry,
and you went from hating his guts to really getting into the last book of understanding him.
And really
that's
feeling,
why I love that character.
Really feeling
He's
bad
great.
For that tragic character.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a beautiful tragic character.
I mean, it's one of the... I mean, first off, I think it's UCLA is going to start teaching a course on Hamlet and Severus Snape as tragic characters. And I think...
Yeah, the great tragic characters.
I think they both are. But one of the things that... You know, I mean, you got your first book, and you have, you know, the big mean teacher wearing the black, and he's yelling at us. Obviously, he's the bad guy. And then they get to the they get past all the trials, and oh my God, it's Quirrell. And then you know, there's kind of always that thread throughout the books,
Until Snape is a bad guy.
Snape's an asshole. It's got to be him. And Hermione's like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah.
He's a jerk, but he's not evil.
Yeah.
And then it's one of the reasons why The Half-Blood Prince is probably my favorite book, is you get back to the basics.
Yeah.
Of, you know, there's something fucking going on, Malfoy and Snape.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hermione's saying, dude, what the fuck? And Ron's saying, I don't know, Dad doesn't think so. And Harry's like, God damn it. And then you get some major shit going on with those two characters.
And the great thing about him is that arc that they have him in there, and he's just such a great tragic character.
I mean,
there's no other way to put it, really.
He's an asshole.
Oh, yeah, he's an asshole.
I think J.K. Rowling always said that she liked writing him, hated the character. Because he did some wonderful things, very heroic and all that stuff, but he's a dick. I mean, he does bully students. He does hold, you know, what Harry's dad did to him before he was cognizant of what was going on against him. He's a dickhead.
I think that's what makes him such a human character.
Yeah, I mean, he's an incredibly human character.
Mm-hmm.
And he's my number two, and I think he's a great character. And Deathly Hallows Part Two, the whole revelation of Snape, I think it's best done scene in the series.
I remember when the books came out, there were those buttons running
around.
Yeah,
Snape did
Snape, friend or foe, you know?
And I was always on the friend's side.
So was I. I mean, by that point, I had been convinced because Dumbledore trusted him.
Yep.
You know, that all this stuff is like...
Dumbledore trusts him, so do I.
And you really get this impression, and it's one of those things of showing rather than telling that Snape loved Harry's mom.
Yep.
And
did you see that coming?
Did I see that? Yes.
Oh, a mile away. Me too. Me too.
It really, I mean, it's high school, you know?
Yep.
I mean, it's, I understood it, and it's fun. He was such a good character.
Mm-hmm. Now, the whole friend or foe thing, I was 100% convinced that he was a good guy.
Yeah.
100% convinced.
Oh, yeah.
However, there was a 20, 30 pages there where I thought I was wrong. It was between the time that he died and the pensive. I'm like, what the fuck? Are you serious? And then I was about ready to throw the book in the goddamn trash.
Sure.
Because I was just convinced. I'm all like, are you serious? That's all they're going to do with Snape? And then that wonderful... I mean, that scene brought tears to my eyes in the theater. I mean,
it's beautifully done in the movie.
I think it's the finest scene in all the movies,
mm-hmm.
and it's wonderfully done. Wonderful translation.
We're going on and on about Snape, and I really want to go.
Stick.
Well, I want to go for Alan Rickman real quick.
Well, I mean, I love Alan Rickman, but
the man can act. I mean, that his performance in that last movie
should get an Oscar.
Sold that character, and it sold that humanity, and sold that tragedy, and I. You know, Alan Rickman. I love Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman has been voted the greatest actor to never receive an Oscar nomination.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I
could
agree
see
with that.
I mean,
totally.
He's up there. I mean, he's wonderful.
He is. And I think it's because he does parts like this.
That's a wonderful part, though.
But it's not one that the Academy is going to take seriously.
Well, I mean, what was that? Today
we'd never see Sigourney Weaver nominated for Aliens, ever.
Probably not.
Not now.
Well, you know, it's... Was that Rasputin thing that he did just called Rasputin, Alan Rickman?
I think so, yeah.
That was so good, and he won all kinds of accolades for that, very deservedly.
Yeah.
But it was on TV, so
yeah.
I mean, he didn't get... But no, I love Snape, and fuck you, you put him way too high as far as I'm concerned, but that's all right. But I guess that brings us down to my number five, huh?
That does bring
you
us down
bastard.
To number five.
My number five is the one that Rachel shook my list up with. I mean, it's a guilty pleasure because it's not a very... nice character, but it's a character that I love to read. It's Dolores Umbridge. I love Umbridge.
She's my number three.
I love
actually.
Her. Isn't she? Don't I mean? How many?
You love to hate that bitch.
Fuck yeah! I mean,
I remember reading. There are several points in the book where you're reading the book and you want to smack. You want to smack Harry and Ron's heads together and all that. But there are numerous points, and it's the fifth book.
Yeah.
It's the fifth book where Dolores Umbridge is there, and you just want her to get her come up. You just want her to get hit by a frickin' bus.
Yeah.
You're like, I want a meteorite to fall out of the sky and fall on this woman. She's a bitch. I hate her. I want her to die.
Yeah, I mean...
because she's so uppity and know-it-all.
I think that's one of the best castings in all the movies.
Yeah.
Emile de Staunton was wonderful.
I've
been a big champion of this character, like, forever.
And it's that bureaucratic...
bullshit,
nose in the air, fuck you, Yeah, Umbridge.
I just said that I think the best scene in all the books or the movies was the Snape thing. I think maybe the best fist-pumping scene was when she went and she called the centaurs a bunch of dirty half-breeds.
Oh, yeah.
And they drug her off into the...
I think that's a great point in the movies.
Yeah,
in the book, it's not bad.
However, in
the books, my fist-pumping scene, which they didn't do justice in the movies, was... Fred and George getting back at her.
I thought that was much better in the books than the movies.
Oh yeah. Well,
part in the book. Really good part in the movie.
It's a great, you know, middle finger to Umbridge. And yeah, the centaurs hauling her off in the movies is like, yeah, you know, some of the you talk about the tragedy of Snape and with Umbridge, like,
no,
bitch
no
deserved it.
Yeah, she deserved. I mean, it once again, I'm gonna
it's like,
get.
Yeah, she can be dragged off and raped by horses. I'm
yeah,
fine with this.
I mean, you know, we can get all like that about it, but once again, tangentially, like one of my favorite scenes in all the books has to do with her, but she's not in it. It's actually in the Half-Blood Prince when Harry and Dumbledore go to recruit. Slughorn, and they're all like, well, and Slughorn says something to Dumbledore about how, well, you know, you can't seem to keep anybody on here, and I just don't think that you treat your teachers right. He's like, well, Horace, I think you have better sense than go into the middle of a centaur herd and call them all a bunch of dirty half-breeds. He's like, huh, yeah, stupid woman. That's just a scene I loved in that book.
Yeah, for me, one of the scenes that really solidified that you know, we've already talked about Mad-Eye Moody. It's it's when in the Blues Deathly Hallows, when they go to the Ministry of Magic.
Yep.
And
great scene.
She's got Mad-Eye's eye on her finger.
Yeah.
You're like, you immediately feel for her. You go, you fucking bitch.
Yeah, yeah.
you take something that is of this great man, this great character,
and you turn it into a peephole.
And you turn it into a freaking peep. Fuck you.
That was something that I think I told Rachel that I would be furious that they cut Umbridge out of these movies.
Yes.
Because that was just a great part. Because she's such a nasty character. She wouldn't lie low. And she was causing her own venom and vitriol and stuff, you know, through the course
And she's one of those characters that's not... I mean, she's not following the Dark Lord.
No,
she's not a Death Eater. Why not?
She
believes firmly in the establishment.
Yep.
And it believes firmly what she's being told and that you do... And you follow this establishment,
and that is
her problem.
I think she's a greatly...
She's not an independent thinker. You know?
No, I think she's a greatly overlooked character. I think she's one of the best characters in Harry Potter.
Yes.
So I happily put her at my number 5.
Yeah, and she was my number 3.
Sweet.
Well, my number 4 was Barty Crouch Jr. Over to your number 4.
My number 4. Son of a bitch. Let's see. My number 4 is... Heads or Tails, Ethan?
That's an excellent question.
I can't make up my 4 or 5 off the top of my head. I'm sorry. Wait a minute.
Hang on, flipping a coin.
Wait a minute. My number 6 was Mad-Eye. My number 5 was Umbridge.
Okay, flipping a coin.
It is Heads.
Heads. My number 4 favorite character is... None other than, yeah, this is expected out of me. None other than Tom Riddle himself, Voldemort.
Didn't even make my list.
Really? I think he's a great character.
But I think there's much more compelling villains.
I just said Voldemort, didn't I?
Yeah, you
did. Dumbledore.
Okay, Dumbledore.
Albus Dumbledore. I love Dumbledore. Dumbledore is one of those characters that's so interesting, and he didn't really start to get interesting until the 5th book. I mean, he's a lot of fun.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong.
I'd agree. I think he became more interesting after he died, but
for
me, he was such a given character that he's the Deus Ex Machina character that has to die.
I do think that he died one book too late. I think he should have died in the 4th book.
I mean, you could peg it at the beginning of this whole series in Sorcerer's Stone that he was going to die.
Of course he's going to die.
And anyone who was surprised that he died is a fucking idiot.
They are a fucking idiot. I've always been a big sucker for the Machiavellian characters.
Sure.
And I don't think there's many other characters short of Machiavelli himself who are more Machiavellian than Dumbledore himself.
Sure. For me, the Machiavellianism of Dumbledore is more talked about, obviously, after his death.
Sure.
And for me, it's a bit ham-fisted, so.
It all fits, though. I mean, that's my thing about it is it doesn't – it doesn't feel heavy-handed at all. I mean, to me, it all fits, especially looking back in retrospect. I find him an interesting character, and I find, like, a lot of the stuff that's – I mean, like, the fact that he's gay, I find that really interesting. The fact that, Rita Skeeter's book, Dumbledore – I don't remember what it's called, the motherfucker Dumbledore, about, you know, it says all these bad shit about him is mostly correct.
Yeah.
Getting down to it, I do personally prefer Michael Gambon. I like Richard Harris a lot. I preferred the Michael Gambon portrayal.
Richard Harris was the more, you know, wizened old master version, and... I would agree with you. I like the Gambon version. I think he was more playful but could be a bit more menacing.
See, and I think that Richard Harris was probably more playful, but I didn't want playful. I wanted that possibility.
That imposing headmaster.
Exactly.
And Gambon did that.
And Gambon did that really well. What else did I like about him? I like the fact that he was, until the fourth book, he was setting up Harry to get his ass killed.
Yeah.
Until Voldemort used Harry's blood to rebuild his body, he had to die. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that the curse worked out. I like the fact he's all Machiavellian. I like the fact that everything that he was doing with Snape was kind of fucked up when you really think about it. Mm-hmm. He was taking advantage of the fact that, you know, he was heartbroken and he was, you know, using this pure love that he felt for somebody as a bargaining chip to, you know, for the greater good, which obviously was, you know, his big theory. But I really like Dumbledore. I've always found him an interesting character. I will always say he died a book or two too late.
You might be changing my opinion of Dumbledore. That's
He's
good.
A great character.
He's a good character.
It's neither here nor there, but I do like the whole. Well, were you privy to the gay Dumbledore controversy?
Yes.
You're privy to the controversy.
Yes.
Okay.
That's I remember it being controversial and me going, why is it controversial? Who gives a shit?
Well, other than the fact that who fucking cares that he's gay,
yeah.
It was he was gay, but you understand the whole, you understand it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he fell in love with Grindelwald. But the way that it worked out is he fell in love with Grindelwald, and when all that shit went wrong and south and stuff, he pretty much became asexual, and he didn't trust himself, so he technically wasn't gay, but he used to be gay, and...
Sure.
I mean, it's such a more intriguing and interesting story
It is an interesting part of his character, and it came out, was more came out after the books came out.
Well, that part, but it's so fucking there.
Yeah, it's one of those things that once you're told about it, you go, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, and I heard about that.
I understand why she wasn't more overt about it.
Well, me too, because, you know, she made a movie with people flying on broomsticks and doing silly little magic potions, and people protested it, saying it was ungodly. So, you throw a fucking fag in there as the main character, and everyone's... Mm-hmm. And that's not my...
As the most powerful wizard on the planet.
Yeah, well, yeah. I like him. I mean, I don't know. To me, he was that... And he grounded everything, so to speak. Sure. I mean, you know, oh my God, there's fucking...
I think making him gay was made him more human.
I mean... The
which was great.
I would actually love to read the Dumbledore book. I don't remember what it's called. Like the friend or foe or whatever the fuck it was. No, that was Snape. But I'd like to read that book, and I'd like to read an actual full-on biography about Dumbledore. I find him interesting. I don't know. I mean... He's just
Dumbledore, villain or menace?
Yeah, whatever the hell it's called. But I do know that in the fifth book, there was the scene when, you know,
which is Order of the Phoenix, right?
Yes, Order of the Phoenix. They're in the Ministry, and, you know, all the shit was going bad, and you know, all the Death Eaters showed up, and I think maybe at that point Sirius had died, maybe not. But everything was going wrong. And then Dumbledore showed up. And
Shows up after the death.
And there's this, or right as, but at any rate, Harry's got this line or, you know, internal monologue where he says, okay, Dumbledore's here. Everything's going to be okay because Dumbledore's here to fix it. And I'm like, that's exactly why he needs to die.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, because, you know, he was exactly... Well, and that, he was that deus ex machina.
That's pretty much the overriding feeling, and they say it in the first book.
Yeah.
Is that, oh, but we've got Dumbledore, so even if the Dark Lord comes back, we're yeah. fine. And well, I knew right then that, okay, well, this motherfucker's going
to
die.
I mean, it didn't take a degree in literature to understand that. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, they always said, you know...
That's why anyone...
He's the only person Voldemort ever feared and bullshit
yeah,
like that.
And that's why anyone... I still say anyone who didn't know he was going to die was an idiot.
Are there actually people like that?
Yes. There are people who are surprised that he died.
Wow.
You people are morons.
Wow. No. No, I thought he should have died in the fourth or fifth book.
The fifth book. So because he died in the sixth book.
Yeah. I do find it very fitting that Snape killed him.
Yes.
Instead of Voldemort. That would have legitimized Voldemort a little bit too much for my taste.
Yes. But, well, yeah. And Voldemort was truly scared of him.
Yeah.
So he couldn't take him on head on.
I do really like the fight with him in the fifth book.
Yeah, fifth book, you get a great bit with that of showing this is why Dumbledore is awesome and is a badass. Right?
And, you know, I mean, once again, we're going to go back to my favorite Dumbledore moment ever was in the end of the fourth book when you know, not Mad-Eye Moody, Barty Crouch Jr. took Harry off to interrogate him to find out what happened in the graveyard and, you know, whatever. And then Barty Crouch Jr. was about to kill Harry or whatever. And then Dumbledore bursts to the room and did some wiggity-wiggity magical shit. And there's a line about how Harry said something about how the calm and whimsical man that, you know, that he's known for all these years, who he's learned from all these years, was gone. And in his place stood a fierce warrior. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he understood why people called him the greatest magician that ever lived. And that was something I thought they did really well in the movie. Which it's really hard to transfer, you know, like an idea like that to film. But I love that part in the books. But I love Dumbledore. I have his wand. I think he's an interesting character.
You do have his wand.
He's my number four.
Well, my number three was Dolores Umbridge.
God damn it! I have to go again.
You have to go again.
So we're getting down to my number two.
You're down to your
number three.
Your number three.
My number three. Is John Weatherwax's number one. It's a character that I've always liked. I've liked ever since I've read said character.
So your number three is John Weatherwax? Really?
Yes, my number three is John Weatherwax. No, John Weatherwax's number one most favorite Harry Potter character. It's Remus Lupin, the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher in Prison of Azkaban. I love
oddly, he didn't make my list.
I love that character.
He's a good character.
I mean, you got Quirrell in the first book, who was, you know, Dark Lord growing out of the back of his head.
Yeah.
You got
which has to suck when you're getting a haircut.
Sure. And then you got dumbass Lockhart.
Yes.
Know.
Well, Lockhart, and then this Tom Riddle.
Yeah, Lockhart / Tom Riddle, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, I'm actually just talking...
You're talking Defense Against the Dark Arts
Teachers. Yeah, Defense Against the Dark Arts Teachers. And then you actually get a competent one.
Yes.
With Lupin. And he's also... I mean, you don't have the Snape level of character development going on with Lupin, but you got some pretty good character development going on. I mean, he does end up learning to love, and he marries Tonks, and you know, and he's fearful for the situation, and unfortunately, it turns out he was right, you know, because in a roundabout way, he got his wife killed, and his son grew up without a father, and blah, blah, blah. But he was a character that I liked reading the books, because he was so warm. I just enjoyed reading him.
And David Thewlis,
yeah.
Did a great job, I think, of bringing that warmth to screen, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, he's a werewolf, I don't care about that. But, I mean, well, in terms of just, like, the... werewolf of him, I didn't care, but what that did to him, how that, you know, tainted his every single movement, you know, I just find him an interesting character, and I like him a lot. Really don't touch
on it in the movies with his hatred and his of the werewolf that made him.
Yeah,
you know,
Greyback?
Greyback. Greyback's in the movie, but they never really, you know, single
him.
Well,
he also killed him, you know that?
Yeah.
Greyback did kill Lupin.
Yeah.
They did not. I mean, they didn't even show that in the book.
They didn't
even say
really
it
didn't
in the book.
Deal with that whole Greyback business in the movies at all.
Well, he was in it, but right.
Yeah, he was in it, but they weren't like, oh.
Yeah, but in the book, Greyback killed Lupin and Bellatrix killed Tonks, for what it's worth. And that's something that they never said in the books. It was something that Rowling said later.
Sure.
He's an interesting character. I always liked him. He was just... He just added like a calm authority. I mean, a competent adult to these books. I thought was needed, and I don't have a lot to say about it, but I really like him. He's my number three.
All right, cool. Well, I guess now we're to my number two.
Mm-hmm.
My number two, I think, is obviously one of the most interesting characters. It's Draco Malfoy.
Really?
Yes.
Did not make my list.
For me,
Lucius is my number nine.
Oh, Lucius is pretty awesome. But for me, Draco is interesting because of the way he develops. Because at the beginning of the whole saga, the beginning of the stories is, yeah, he's a bully, and you're immediately thinking, oh, well, he's obviously going to be a bad guy. He's the nemesis for Harry and all that. At least the childhood nemesis.
Sure.
You know, he's the anti-Harry type of thing. And as it goes on, I think he becomes such an interesting conflicted character, especially when you see him in the last two movies or the last book is
last two books even.
Last two books he gets in way over his head.
There's some great stuff going on with him in the sixth book, in the Half-Blood Prince.
With those, he's so trying to be something that he's trying to be his father. He's trying to be very awesome. But he, you could tell his heart's not really in it. He's trying to be this Death Eater type of thing because that's what his father is. And you can tell, at least in the first, you know, four stories, or four or five books, four or five movies, that he's there. He's, you know, he's the spoiled rich little brat and whatnot. But in the Half-Blood Prince especially, you sort of come to realize that he's not this... He isn't this
Well, by the time that by the time that the fifth book happened, and, you know, Harry is like, ooh, Malfoy's up to something, and Hermione's like, oh, what the fuck, Harry? I'm sitting there saying, what the fuck, Harry? You know, it's got to be something else. And he just seemed like such a lame and impotent character who wasn't capable of really causing any real problems.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an interesting...
Like you felt like you've outgrown him as an adversary, and, I mean, he's obviously not going to defeat you. And
yeah, and I mean, he took on Voldemort head-to-head. I mean, who the fuck's this stupid little blonde rich boy?
Yeah, and I like how they evolved that and put that in the movies and had... You know, in the story that Malfoy is the one who disarms Dumbledore and whatnot.
I like that.
It's done in such a way that you don't really realize it and you don't really get it as far as that Malfoy...
When they actually started talking about the passing of the wands, I automatically thought, well, fuck, Malfoy disarmed him. And so that means Harry's... I automatically thought that.
And it's one of those things that people just discounted him because, I mean, Voldemort showed up and it's like, oh, shit, it's the Dark Lord.
Yeah.
And that's why the character is interesting to me. For Draco is he has that arc and he survives at the end, you know, and he's obviously in over his head, and you sympathize with him.
I never sympathized with him.
Well, for me, I did. I felt kind of bad for him. It's like, okay,
I felt kind of bad for him, but I have a hard time calling that sympathy because, I mean, he made his own nest and he was given the stuff to make his own nest, but at the same time, it's a pretty nice nest, you know. So,
yeah. And the way I looked at it is he was sort of pushed into it and goaded into it because of the position of his father.
Well, and, I mean, the same can be said for Harry.
Well, yeah. and for that reason, they're interesting two sides of the same coin type of character. So, yeah.
I do like Malfoy. I just didn't put him on my list. Lucius is my number nine. I like Lucius quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Draco, he's a good character. He's a tried and true... There from the beginning, pain in the ass, and you gotta love that.
Sure, but that is my number two.
Turn the tables on you because my number two was Severus Snape, so we're gonna go right on down to your number one.
Okay, well, my number one is talking about, you know, two sides, same coin type of business. It's Neville Longbottom.
My number one as well.
You know,
I love Neville Longbottom.
He's one of those characters, and I have to agree with you. I think I like him better in the movie than I do in the books.
You like him in the book a lot.
He's cool in the books,
yeah.
But in the movies,
he's a badass.
He's awesome.
Movies, yeah.
And especially the way they portray him, because really when you first meet him, he's this goofball, you know, bit of a putz.
Yeah.
You sort of like,
always chasing his toad.
Always chasing his toad. You know, bad things always happen to him. And
breaking his arm.
And then you get some great development with him because, you know, especially in the fourth book, you learn about what happened to his parents, why he's raised by his gran. Yeah.
It seemed like it was in the third book, and then the other kids learned about it in the fourth, if I remember right.
And, you know, he's interesting at that point. And then, you know, he starts to grow. And you're right, in the books, they do a much bigger job, much better job of sort of doing this parallel between him and Harry. And
well,
and
in the... I always said...
It's not really touched on in the movies.
You know,
I think hardly, if at all.
Not at all. I don't think they did it at all. But in the books, I always thought of him as, you know, 1920s John Watson. They didn't know what the hell to do with him, so they kind of made him a comic foil.
Yeah.
And then in the movies, you know, you actually, you know, since it's a visual medium instead of an intellectual medium, you actually could just kind of have him there. And, you know, they had the benefit of the books being out way before the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what's his name? Matthew Lewis, I think, is the actor's name.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to, you know, kind of take some of those nuances into his character. And he was more, I mean, he was just a kind of a bumbling moron in the books, but in the movies, I think he's more
awkward.
Sort
of like that lovable idiot type of thing, at least at the very beginning, because he's like, oh, it's Neville.
Yeah.
Neville. And then, you know, he sort of evolves to the point where you really love him.
Yeah.
And by the end of the book, I know, but by the end of the movies, I knew I was going to be pissed if they didn't have a Neville scene in there.
I would have been so furious.
The scene in the movie did it better in the book, and it was that it talk about fist pumping, and you know it's like fuck yeah, Neville, you deserve to have some glory and kick some ass and chew bubblegum and be all out of bubblegum. And in the books, you know, him killing the snake he kills the snake anyway. Moving on, in the movies, it's much more epic. It's much more that's right. I am a bad motherfucker.
Well, I mean,
I've been here for 7 years. So along with Harry, I've been here by his side the whole damn time. And
it's like I keep telling people, in the books, there's the whole story about the Chosen One and how it would be it'd be the child of a couple that twice thwarted Voldemort and is born at the end of July. And that could have been either Harry or Neville.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that Voldemort chose Harry because he was a half-blood like himself, and so he thought he was more of a threat.
Sure.
And so Neville's
mm-hmm.
implication in the prophecy was just kind of lessened.
Yeah.
And,
well,
the way it works in the movies is... I think it's sort of mentioned. I don't even remember it being mentioned, but it's been a while.
See, and I do. I think it was mentioned along the lines of like he's talking to Harry at one point. And he says, "You know, it could have easily have been me.
Yeah.
I was born at blah blah blah." And then they just don't do anything with it beyond that.
The way that it happened. Okay, in the book. All right. Well, I guess. I mean, obviously, we're way into spoilers. But in the book,
I'd say if you haven't been spoiled at this point, you're an idiot.
Yeah, but in the book, Harry, the whole thing happens with Harry going to the forest and getting not killed by Voldemort and the whole limbo scene, and then carrying his unconscious body up there and Voldemort saying, "You all suck, I killed Harry Potter, ha ha ha, suck my snake dick." And then Neville comes out and he says, you know, "Fuck you," all that noise.
Yeah.
And then at that point, Voldemort pulls the hat from the house, puts it on his head, catches it on fire. And then something happens, and then Neville pulls out the sword and cuts off the snake's head. And then there's like a little fight that happens between Voldemort and Harry, and then Harry kills Voldemort.
Yeah.
In the movie, it's much more cinematically dynamic.
Yes.
Because it happens that way up to the point where he pulls out the hat. Does he do the hat in the movie?
Yes.
He pulls out the hat. Oh, that's right. He pulls out the hat, catches on fire, and then Neville and throws Neville into the Great Hall. And then mm-hmm. there's this big sprawling fight between Harry and Voldemort going all over the fucking Hogwarts ground. And the whole time, Neville is going after the goddamn snake.
Yeah, well, it's Hermione and Ron trying to go after it, and they fail.
Well, Hermione and Ron are kind of going after it, but it's fucking trying to kill them. And then Neville is right there, and they've lost both their fangs, and it's about ready to eat them, and it jumps up, and then he chops off its head. And at that point, Voldemort and Harry are locked in a spell. Mm-hmm. And when the snake dies, it momentarily distracts Voldemort, and it kills him. So the argument can be made in the movies that Neville really was the chosen one, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's a great character.
He's one of the unsung heroes.
Oh, absolutely an unsung hero. I do know that Rowling has gone on to say, I mean, there's obviously that final chapter of the 19 years later where they said what happened to Harry and Harry and Hermione and et cetera. And they mentioned that Neville is a professor mm-hmm. at the school. He's a herbology professor.
Right.
And Rowling has gone on to state that he also married Hannah Abbott, and they are now doing the job of Aberforth Dumbledore. They run the Hogshead Tavern, and all that stuff. And he's a great character, and I've always liked Neville a lot. And I liked Neville before there was that action hero Neville Longbottom from Part 7. And he's a great character. He's my favorite character. He's my number one character. I mean, he's great.
I think the movies made me appreciate him even more.
I mean, to me, like when I was watching the movies, I mean, or rather reading the books, it just felt like, yeah, this is somebody I'm going to latch on to because mm-hmm. he's
for
cute.
Me, he's this character that's been by Harry's side for all this time in Harry's shadow, even more so than Ron. Ron gets noticed at least, but no one notices Neville. Neville's always there.
Neville's even Ron's shadow, for the love of God.
Yeah,
I mean, he's not one of the
Trinity. By the end of the series, he gets to step out, he kicks some ass,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, you know what? Fuck yeah. Neville, you've always been by, you know, as Harry, it's like, you've always been by my side, and you deserve some of this. You're awesome.
Yeah, and I think he's my favorite character, and that's cool. I'm pleased with you, Ethan, because he's a good character.
He's a great character.
Cool. So both of our favorite characters are Neville Longbottom. Exactly. So I guess it brings us down to the rundown of our list.
To the rundown.
Rundown.
Well, I'll go ahead and do it. My number 10 is Hagrid. Number 9 is Minerva McGonagall.
It's a good character.
Number 8 is Luna Lovegood.
Yep.
Number 7 is Arthur Weasley. Number 6, Creature. Number 5, Severus Snape. Number 4, Barty Crouch Jr. Number 3, Dolores Umbridge. Number 2, Draco Malfoy. And number 1, Neville Longbottom.
Excellent. My number 1, I'm really, really, really distancing myself from the films. This is a character that was never in the films, but I really liked him from the books. It was Peeves the Poltergeist.
Yep,
Peeves. He's a lot of fun. I mean, he's obviously nowhere near any character development, but, you know, he was one of those constants. It was just an awful lot of fun to see him there. My number 9 was Lucius Malfoy. My number 8 was Voldemort. My number 7 was Crookshanks. I always liked Crookshanks. The cat. The half cat, half Neasel. The pet of Hermione, who, yeah, he was cool. And then it gets down to the list I've already mentioned. Is number 6 is Umbridge. My number 5 was Moody / Barty Crouch Jr. My number 4 was Dumbledore. Number 3 was Lupin. Number 2 was Severus Snape. And number 1 was Neville Longbottom. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm a big fan of Harry Potter. I'm actually going to check out Pottermore once it gets out of beta. Mm-hmm. I know that Chris from Back to Broadcast is already in it. He's loving it. But
cool.
I haven't managed to get into it. I do want to check it out, but I probably wouldn't have the time.
It's the Harry Potter MMO.
Well, it's an MMO, but there's a whole bunch more than that going on as well. But I like Harry Potter. I think they were a wonderful book series, and I enjoyed the films quite a bit. And kind of sad to see it over, but at the same time, you know, you got to hope that Harry gets to rest finally.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes through all this bullshit for the first, 7 years of his wizarding life, and maybe he just deserves to, you know, be a normal moron. So
yes. To be a normal boy.
Yeah, a normal man.
Normal man.
A normal man. But that brings us to an end of our top 6 section. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with the outro.
I'm a lonely boy. I live beneath the staircase. My cousin is real fat. He makes my life a sad state. The Dursleys are my guardians. They are so mean and evil. If only I had some magic powers, surely I could make them tremble.
And this brings us to the outro section. We just talked about a top six favorite Harry Potter characters. I'd like to figure out a way to talk Harry Potter on this show again, because I like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah, good books, good movies. I mean, at this point, I mean, I don't know how the hell we'd stretch it for a third show, but...
I don't know.
We stretched...
can't really do Harry Potter villains.
Well, probably could. There's probably... Well, there's at least seven of them.
Not really.
Kinda. Well, you can
Voldemort sort of is...
you can do Quirrell and... Voldemort.
Yeah, but then how does that just turn into another character's business?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe we could, maybe we can't. But it,
top six shots
but,
in the
but we
defi- Harry Potter films.
But, yeah, we could do that. But we definitely have been able to justify two shows worth.
We have been, yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. It's kind of cool that Ethan and I agreed on our number one. That doesn't happen often.
No, it doesn't.
But we did agree. What?
What was it?
Neville.
Neville.
But
he's cool.
Neville's pretty cool. But yeah, I guess that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Next week, we're going to have on a gentleman I met from the local Lawrence, Kansas podcasting community by the name of Ethan as well. I think we're going to be talking coming-of-age films, and it should be cool. I need to get all those details and whatnot worked out. But hopefully, that's what we're going to be doing next week. And I do know that we have on... Target, we definitely have a samurai movie show coming as well as a comedy.
I don't know how the samurai one's going to work out.
Top six Kurosawa movies.
Well, most of the samurai movies I've seen have been Kurosawa, and I might not have even seen 10 samurai movies.
Yeah, but we probably have a comedy show coming. We probably have a zombie show
I know
coming.
I've seen 10 comedies.
Yep, probably.
I know, and...
Probably
zombies.
Haven't seen 10 funny comedies.
Yeah, I've probably seen some. I've probably seen 10 zombie movies.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
I have to think about that one.
Good ones. I own a couple of them. Shaun of the Dead's a good one.
Shaun of the Dead is pretty awesome.
Yep. But we got shows. Shows galore coming, and those are just the ones that we got worked out.
Yeah.
We do have some genres that we haven't touched yet that I'm sure we'll get to at some point.
Oh, yeah.
It will be cool. But... until it is cool, this is Aaron.
This is Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly.
I'm a Ravenclaw. I like to read books. When I cast spells, they're off the freaking hook.
I'm a Gryffindor. I'll fly with my friends. We'll never back down and fight to the end.
I'm a Ravenclaw, got wit beyond measure. I can catch a snitch like it's caught up in a tether.
I'm a Slytherin, the house of the snake. Come get in my way, I get tossed in the lake.
I'm a Gryffindor, and we own the sky. Yeah, we always win with our rally cry.
I'm a Slytherin, the top of my class. If you disagree, I'll kick your muggle ass.
Alan, do you even know what Harry Potter is?
Well, I haven't read the book, but I've seen all the movies.
Let's beat him.
Let's beat him.
I'm a Slytherin, a big fan of Snape. If it's a mum album, we have to say Snape.
I'm a Hufflepuff, we're true to the end. United we stand, so I stand with my friends.
Griffin Jor, it's brave as they come. And my namesake sword will get
So who's this Sheldon Cooper guy anyway, Aaron?
It's from the show The Big Bang Theory.
You're out of the band.
He's no spy.